Welcome to the Energy Forum. I'm Ken Medlock, coming to you live from CERAWeek here in Houston. Today, we're taking a closer look at global oil markets and the growing role of Latin America. From shifting supply and demand to new investment and political dynamics, the region is becoming increasingly important in the global energy picture. Joining me is Francisco Minaldi, Wallace S. Wilson Fellow in Latin American Energy Policy at the Baker Institute Center for Energy Studies. We'll break down what's driving these changes and what it means for prices, production, and the path ahead. Francisco, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
So it's been some time since Maduro's capture, so I'm just going to dive into Venezuela first and we'll kind of move around the region. But since that happened, I wonder if you could tell our listeners what's changed, what hasn't, and effectively, what's the outlook for investment in Venezuela?
Sure. So some things have changed dramatically. Of course, you know, you in December had a blockade of Venezuelan exports that were going mostly to the black market. 80% were going to the black market. Just about 16% were licensed to go to the U.S. through Chevron, and a little bit went to Cuba. And of course, that was stopped during December, and eventually after the capture of Maduro, the U.S. Allowed the exports, but now to licensed destinies. And for now, I mean, we can see an increase of exports to the United States, some going to storage in the Caribbean, and some still going to Europe and India, but nothing going to the black market. There were just a few tankers that at the very early days took off, but other than that, there is a absolute change in that. And of course, that means that now the revenues are moved in a very different way. Instead of money laundering from the black market, this is going to an account in the U.S. Treasury and then is transferred under some rules back to Venezuela. In terms of production, of course, there are some companies, the incumbents, who are there. About half of Venezuela's production is in the hands of joint ventures with foreign companies. But the really big player, of course, is Chevron, that produces about 25% of Venezuela's oil, and they are poised to increase production more than anyone else in the near future. But you also have Repsol from Spain that is going to increase production significantly between these two, north of 200,000 barrels in the next couple of years. And then you have other European companies like Eni and Morel and Prom that will also be adding some barrels. There is a recent announcement that Shell is not only going to go into natural gas, but also is interested in oil and has signed some initial deals there. And then, of course, there are a few question marks, right? On the one hand, you have Chinese and Russians, national companies produce about 20% of Venezuela's oil. What's going to happen with that? There were some contracts, even production sharing contracts, that were given to local companies that are not necessarily the ones that the U.S. government would license to operate. And so there are a bunch of things to iron out, but there was a relevant change in the law. As you probably heard, a few of the CEOs and even Secretary Wright mentioned that there are still some things to clarify in the law. In particular, the tax royalty regime is too open-ended and too discretionary, and they also want some international arbitration clarification on how that would work. But so things are shaping in the right direction, but there are plenty, of course, of hurdles, plenty of uncertainties, and as you know, the issues in Venezuela are basically above ground issues, and so those are the ones who need to be resolved.
So how long will it take for the fortunes to shift? Because we saw a pretty rapid decline in production from the middle of last decade to the current platform we're sitting on. What will it take to actually revitalize production, refurbish infrastructure? What's your outlook?
Yeah, there are some low-hanging fruits, right? Because, before U.S. sanctions, Venezuela was producing about 1.3, 1.4 million barrels. There is a ton of spare infrastructure. There are a lot of bottlenecks and and decay in some parts of the infrastructure, but some of it is not in bad shape. So I expect that those sort of brownfields that are just you need to, you know, rework some wells or drill a few more wells, but with all the infrastructure in place, that those are going to lead to some increase in production in the next, let's say, 2 to 3 years. It could be 1.5 million barrels from the 1 million barrels that we have today. But to go back to the, you know, levels of peak levels of Venezuela, 3.6 million barrels, we're talking about $100 billion of investment and about 8 to 10 years. And that is something that is not going to happen with this sort of transitional situation that we have, because companies, in order to invest in the green fields that require massive new infrastructure, you know, these are projects with maturity of 20, 30 years. These investments are not going to happen without a lot of clarity, particularly in a country that has had this reputation of contract reneging for so long.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's important to put into context the opportunity set outside of Venezuela as well. And so to do that, I want to kind of just expand a little bit more broadly on Latin America specifically, because we've seen tremendous opportunities actually seized in Brazil, for example, over the last 15 years or so. Guyana, of course, is the next great thing. Tremendous story evolving there. Argentina with the well-known Vaca Muerta shale opportunity. And then even outside of the oil and gas arena, if we get into minerals and metals, there's a host of other opportunities from Chile to Brazil, even into Venezuela that can be exploited. So I wonder if you could maybe talk a little bit about each one of those countries respectively and how they juxtaposition against the opportunity of Venezuela, just to give our listeners a better understanding of what the full opportunity set is in Latin America.
Sure. I have to say that for the first time in a long while, I'm relatively optimistic about the outlook for Latin America's oil sector. I mean, to give you an idea, Latin America has been a tremendous underperformer compared to the potential. Latin America, my estimates that that could be producing, you know, 18 million barrels of oil. It has been producing between 8 and 10, depending on what you include there, right? And the very fact is that for the last 3 to 4 years, we have seen growth for the first time in a long time. Latin America, as production declined during the oil boom of the first part of this century, which is astonishing if you compare to what happened in the U.S. and Canada. But now, as you point out, there are very interesting success stories in the region. In particular, let's talk about Brazil and Guyana. Brazil, of course, the largest producer, close to 4 million barrels today. This is, by the way, peak production ever for a country in Latin America. So pretty impressive development for a country that, you know, before they discovered the pre-salt, nobody thought that could become a net exporter of oil. And they did it, I think, because they did a very substantial reforms to their oil sector in the 1990s, created a very strong institutional framework with an independent regulatory agency. They strengthened the national company. They listed the company in international markets. And even though there have been some, you know, corruption scandals surrounding Petrobras, it is one of the best run national companies in the world. And in particular, the IOCs were willing to go into Brazil in deep waters, which is the riskier type of investment in terms of, you know, high sunk costs, long term. You need to, from exploration to production, it takes, you know, a decade.
Long payback period.
Exactly, long payback period. And they were able to amazingly, you know, have this boom. Of course, the quality of the resource in the pre-salt is very impressive, but at the same time, because they have been the only country in the region that has never reneged on the deals. There are a few concerns. You know, recently they levied a temporary export tax that has some investors worried about the reputation, the hard, you know, built reputation of Brazil. But I think overall we can say that Brazil is an amazing success story. Of course, the other very interesting story, as you point out, is Guyana. Guyana, you know, just discovered oil in 2019, and then they are going to be producing 1 million barrels very soon. It's amazing. And notice, the only country in which there is no national oil company. And that is very interesting, because it has allowed a company like Exxon, that is tremendously effective in executing, to develop this contract, and is the the highest growing economy in the region. It has been for the past few years, and it's going to continue to be. So I think it's a very impressive success story. There are, of course, like everywhere, potential challenges in the future, because this is a country that had limited institutional capacities, but so far they have managed to do it relatively well. Argentina, another fascinating case, massive potential, the only other basin outside of the US of shale that is really being developed. And of course, that opens tremendous opportunities for US companies, US technology, US service companies to go there. But so far, Argentina, macroeconomic issues, again, a contract reneging all over the place, had made this very hard. At the same time, shale is less risky than deep waters, because it's a short cycle kind of
something
investment.
We've written about, actually.
Exactly. Absolutely. And so Argentina, I am relatively bullish about liquids. The question mark is a little bit on the gas, because the gas does require building very significant infrastructure in high sunk cost, like, you know, LNG trains, pipelines, and that represent a significant cost. And Argentina is relatively far away from the market. Of course, if the price of LNG skyrockets, we might see more interest. But bottom line, that's the hurdle in Argentina. But there is also some significant potential. Out of those countries, I think in the oil sector, we are seeing actually a decline. And there could be, if policy changes, some reversal of that decline. But so far, it doesn't look promising.
So you just mentioned that, and I want to just I want you to maybe address Bolivia, because there were some recent elections and promise of change. What do you think the prospects are there?
The challenge for Bolivia is that it has been a country that for the last almost two decades has been closing their economy. Resource nationalism has made the country very unattractive for foreign investors. So natural gas reserves significantly declined because of lack of investment. And the problem that they have is they are landlocked, right? And they have a historical dispute with Chile, so they don't want to export through Chile. And what they did was mostly they export to Brazil and Argentina. Well, it turns out that one of their customers now has plenty of gas and, in fact, wants to use Bolivia as a pathway to export to Brazil. And Brazil also has plenty, in this case, of associated gas that, you know, there are some issues about how they will, monetize it. But bottom line, the market is shrinking and Bolivia's reserves are very much down. The new government wants to really attract foreign investment. It's really aligning with the U.S. So maybe they are able to at least reverse some of the decline. But the prospects are not great.
That's really interesting. You've leaned into challenges in every single one of these regions. And you mentioned the lack of a national oil company in Guyana. But we know that historically, Latin American countries, for the resource wealth that they have, and to be honest with you, I think it should be the richest region in the world because of that. They sort of continue to trip over their own 2 feet, right? So it's a wave of investment followed by expropriation and nationalization and then a reopening. Do you see a risk of that happening again anytime in the near future?
I mean, I think that the risk is there in some of the countries more than in others, of course, particularly, you know, episodes like the one we are witnessing. If we already had massive new investments and this spike in prices happened, you know, that always brings about the resource nationalism in the region. Having said that, I think, you know, we have a very contrasting reality that I think Latin Americans are learning from, right? We have Brazil and Guyana doing amazingly well with more open policies, with more market-friendly policies. And we had the example of the tragic situation of Venezuela, right, that has the largest resource endowment and has done it's astonishing to think that a country next door to Venezuela that had zero reserves, you know, less than a decade ago, is going to be producing more than Venezuela pretty soon. Yeah. And Venezuela has, you know, this humongous resource endowment and hasn't been able to develop. So I hope that those lessons are not forgotten. But I cannot discard that, you know, that some countries will fall again into this trap, because a lot of the leadership of the politicians in the region tend to only open up the sector when they must, when they are forced to, because they don't have the capacity. But when they feel emboldened because they, you know, prices are up and production is up, they tend to be short-sighted.
Very rent capture oriented, but there is a lesson in the outcome. I think it's important to highlight that, and I'm glad you pointed that out. So the last question I want to ask you, because you hinted at this when we were talking about Venezuela to open, but the role of China in the region more generally and throughout Latin America, I wonder if you could expand a little bit on that and how that might create some challenges for expansion or might create opportunities for expansion.
Sure. So it's interesting that China has had a very aggressive policy of going into Latin America in different ways. First wave was more giving loans to some countries, in particular Venezuela. Later on, their national oil companies and other energy companies and mining companies started to invest heavily in the sector. And you can see a much more assertive and aggressive involvement of China. Of course, that was noticed by the U.S., and you can see in the new U.S. Foreign policy strategy an emphasis on trying to, you know, regain the influence that the United States has in the region. There are some big challenges, for example, because the U.S. doesn't have that many big mining companies to offer an alternative to the Chinese, for example. But without a doubt, in the oil sector, it's more clear that the U.S. does have the capacity to really, be the main player in the region, along other Western companies. And I think in the case of Venezuela, China has been, for the past few years, not investing much in Venezuela. And I think that will only continue, that trend with the new political reality. At the same time, I think it's pretty interesting that Latin America is becoming one of the most important areas of growth for private companies, mostly Western. You know, there is the estimate that the production by private companies in Latin America could reach about 4 million barrels by the end of this decade, which could be about 20% of their global liquids production. So pretty interesting development. And why is that? It's a combination of the region mostly, not all, but mostly being open for business, wanting to bring private investors in. Other very resource-rich countries like the Middle East, less so. And of course, the geopolitical issues. And that, to bring back to the, of course, a theme that has been resonating here, you know, the recent events, of course, give Latin America a new look as a country that is, as a region that is outside of the geopolitical conflicts in the, you know, the Russia area, in the Persian Gulf. And so that clearly in an analysis of portfolio for companies is an attractive advantage.
So I lied. I will ask one more question because you just raised an issue that is on everybody's mind, which is what happens next with regard to the conflict in Iran? How will investment flows and ultimately resource development opportunities evolve? Latin America certainly stands to play a major role in that, but it then becomes an issue of where does the capital come from? And I think you might see a hint at this because Qatar Energy is in a JV with Exxon at Golden Pass. And when the first two trains of that come on, it could effectively offset the lost production capacity from the attacks that recently happened over the next 3 to 5 years, right? Do you think you might see some Middle East interest in growing resource development opportunities in Latin America as a means of diversification?
That's a very interesting question. This started even before, of course, these events. And yes, they have been exploring opportunities in Brazil. They have recently been exploring opportunities in Venezuela and Guyana. They already signed a deal in Guyana. So, yes, I think, of course, it's sort of a complex situation in that some of these countries are, of course, competitors in the global markets. And so in that sense, it's like when Russia invested in Venezuela that, you know, Venezuelans were suspicious that do we have aligned interest with these guys? But I do think that that's a possibility of diversification of risk for these countries and that capital to flow in, and of course also to the US, also perhaps to Canada. So the Western Hemisphere looks good in that regard. And of course, if you know, the US, which is a very safe bet, and Canada in terms of you know, property rights, etc., if the resource potential or the prices do not make it, you know, as attractive as Latin America, of course, would have an advantage. But of course, there was always going to be this issue of the very low above ground risks in North America compared to the region.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you mentioned U.S. obviously, Canada, tremendous interest in expanding production in Western Canada, in particular, moving out into the Pacific Basin. That's of course attractive to, you know, net importing countries in Asia, from South Asia all the way up to Northeast Asia. So it's going to be interesting, to say the least, to see how this competitive landscape evolves, particularly in the wake of the conflict in Iran. It's going to be different.
Definitely. I think so.
Francisco, thanks for joining us today. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in to the Energy Forum here at CERAWeek in Houston.
Thank you, Ken.